Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hello, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been a while. We've been airing a series that we recorded a while back, so
yeah.
Back in recording some fresh new shows
for
this new year, and you want to revisit the subject of what it means to be a trustee.
Yes, yes. It's a it's rather large topic, and what I notice is that we set up people in these positions, whether it's as a successor trustee, sometimes financial power of attorney, even healthcare power of attorney. And it's because we trust an individual. We want them to be managing our money if it's through a trust or financial power of attorney, or we trust them because they have some medical background or they're more compassionate to be our healthcare agent.
But what about legal background?
Yeah. Well, I stay away from people who have legal background. But no. But we put them in a position, and yet they oftentimes, as a matter of fact, a high majority of times, they have no understanding of what the role truly means and what their responsibilities, what their duties are going to be. And so I recently just ran across this. I had some clients in, and one of them was going to be assisting one of my clients. So they brought in a friend, and I started going through the duties of the trustee and what their responsibilities were, and I could just see their face starting to lose color. And they're going,
that's kind of what my face looked like when my aunt told me I was her trustee.
Yeah. And
what?
And so
I was about 15.
Okay. Yeah. And so as I watched this individual try to comprehend everything that they were supposed to do, if to start stepping in and assisting this individual, I recognized by body language and, again, by color of face that, boy, this is a rather big topic, and I'm not sure that there's a lot of really good information. I mean, you could go to Washington state law, and there are statutes about your duty and what you're supposed to do, but, you know, that'd be pretty boring radio. So I'd much rather break it down into more of a conversation style to try to help individuals understand what this thing called a successor trustee or even just a trustee means and what is the responsibility. So it was just because of a recent example that I thought, you know, this is probably a good topic to cover
it. Well, is a trustee the same thing as an executor?
Well, not exactly, because a trustee may need to take over during someone's lifetime. So an executor in Washington,
just for the will.
Yeah. In Washington, we call them a personal representative. It is really denoting that someone has died, they have a will, and we need to open up a probate. Or we call an executor, even if we don't have to open up a probate, someone who is responsible for administrating and helping get an estate all cleaned up, paying the bills, last credit cards, last illnesses, gathering all the money, and then dispersing it to the proper beneficiaries. So when we talk about an executor, again, personal representative in Washington, it's more about a very specific time, and that is also – could also be the responsibility of a successor trustee if someone utilizes a trust instrument, right? Because we have one of two different documents that I can use. One is called a will. One is called a revocable living trust. And so there are similar duties to an executor. That is terminology used in a will and probate. And some of those same duties would be present in a successor trustee after the main creator dies. And so, yes, there could be crossing duties that each of these roles have to play, but they're very, very different roles, and they're not the same instrument. So, so when we talk about a trustee, we're specifically honing in on someone who has created a trust, a revocable living trust, or it could be an irrevocable trust. Well, during this short series, we'll kind of cover both of those and what that might look like and how the duties might be similar or different. Okay. But in a successor trustee, or rather trustee duties, it is specifically for a trust instrument. So okay. It's not for a will.
So we're not talking about wills today.
Nope.
You prefer trusts anyway. That's what you...
Yes. I think that they're a far more flexible instrument. They accomplish people's objectives and purposes with their finances and what the vision is for their family, versus a will is an instrument that simply directs the money to the right people. Mm-hmm. That's good. We need
Better
to have
nothing.
Instructions.
Yeah.
We need to know where things are supposed to go. Mm-hmm. But when I've reviewed wills, there's no tax language in them, or if it is, it won't work. And oftentimes there's backstory with families of why they should or should not receive money just into their hands. And so I generally prefer to utilize a trust instrument as the instrument of choice when you're thinking about estate planning. We can deal with tax issues. We can deal with long-term financial assistance. I can better assist my clients if they become incapacitated or disabled or need assistance. So, yes, I tend as a practitioner to lean towards a trust instrument. It doesn't mean that I don't do wills. It just means that that is my leaning, that because it's what I do every day. So that's how I tend to lean which instrument I guide people towards. But so we need to start with, I guess, some of the basics of, you know, what is a trustee? What do they do? So we're just going to talk about trustees here for this time. And so,
okay, well, let's start it off then. So you've kind of said what a trustee is. Again, it's connected to being involved with an actual trust.
Yes.
What kind of people can be a trustee? Who is that person that we pick for that role?
Yeah. So, number one, when we create a trust for ourselves, okay, so let me go all the way back to the foundations and very basic premise of a trust. Most individuals, when we use a trust for estate planning purposes, we create what is known as a revocable living trust. Now, the term revocable means that that person, the creator of the trust, has full power and control over that trust instrument. So much power and control that they can revoke it. In other words, they can take all their assets out of the trust. They can then run the entire trust through a shredder, and it no longer exists. Mm. So a revocable living trust is an instrument we use. We create the vision of the client. How do you want to be taken care of should you experience a health incident and need help? As a matter of fact, over 75% of individuals will need some type of assistance from someone else during their lifetime. And in a will package, we use financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney. Well, we use the same instruments in a trust. However, since the trust would hold a majority of all assets, then the trust instructions actually take over for those assets that are in it. Now, there's only two things we don't put in a trust in my firm. Number one is an IRA. So anything that is tax deferred, by tax law, that must stay out of a revocable living trust. Otherwise, it would be immediately taxable. That would be bad. So anything that is tax deferred, an IRA, traditional IRA, 401k, Roth IRA, 453b. So all of these instruments are tax deferred. We earn retirement money, and we haven't paid taxes on it yet. Those don't get retitled to a trust. But otherwise, and then vehicles, personally, I don't put them into trusts in my firm system. I know other attorneys do. I don't have any objections to that. But we do not, because there's a non-probate way to transfer a vehicle after somebody passes away. So therefore, those two assets in my firm process, we don't put into a trust. Otherwise, everything else is supposed to be in a trust, your checking accounts, your investment accounts, which are non-IRAs, your house, life insurance policies, business interests. So anything else that is of value, we need to have in that holding container called a trust. When we put something in a trust, that means that the instructions we've created now attach to that asset, and that's what we want. We want the trust instructions to attach to the asset. Therefore, if something ever happened to me during my lifetime, if I had an illness, if I had an accident, if I started to have memory issues and someone else needed to come alongside of me and manage my finances because I should not be managing my finances at that point in time, now when they become what we call a successor trustee, the one who takes over as trustee, it's the backup trustee, then that person has strong instructions and all the assets, excluding the primary, which is your retirement assets, are now under their management because they're all in the trust. So in a trust environment, in a revocable living trust, again, revocable, full power and control, we start with the client being the first trustee. So if you're married, then spouses become co-trustees together. And that's how most married couples run their finances, which is they have a joint banking account. They jointly own their house. And so when we create a joint trust, so in Washington, it's a community property state, which means that it doesn't matter who has earned more or less money. If you have a stay-at-home spouse, can't say a stay-at-home wife because that's offensive. So it's a stay-at-home spouse. Okay. So you have a stay-at-home spouse. It doesn't matter who the breadwinner is. All the money, unless you have a prenuptial agreement or some other property agreement, anything that is earned in a community property state is assumed to be community property, which means it all goes into the same bucket and you manage it together. So in a community property state, we make a single together trust. That's not always true in other states. So if a listener may have just moved from a different state and they had done estate planning, you might actually have separate trusts. You may have a trust for the husband and a trust for the wife. You have different trusts, and then in that separate property state, you actually put different assets in each of the trusts and try to keep them balanced. So in separate property states, they need separate trusts. But we live in a community property state, one of nine community properties. So we get the luxury of kind of maintaining how we've always, or how most married couples have ran their marriage, which is we're going to have joint. Now, not all do. But
so when
fine.
You're in a married situation, this is the revocable trust.
Yeah.
There is no trustee per se, a third party person yet.
No, well, we name them.
You do name them.
And that is the successor.
Okay.
They have no power until certain events.
Yeah, most people, they don't want some third party coming in and managing their life until they can't do it anymore.
Until certain events take place, such as, what if I'm not feeling well and I shouldn't be managing my finances? Then I need someone else to take over for me.
But wouldn't that be the spouse?
In a married environment, yes. When we have a couple, both of them manage together the trust, they're co-trustees. So my wife and I are co-trustees of our revocable living trust. If I fall down, hit my head on the sidewalk, now I can't think straight, and my wife's hand is already there as a co-trustee, we actually don't need to do anything other than get me off of things so I can't go into the accounts and start giving all my money away or something else. So I might need to be removed as trustee, and yes, that would leave my spouse in full power and control. Now, if we were already in our 80s, that may be an uncomfortable position, specifically if the one who is having health incidences was the main individual who managed the finances. So we all have different roles in our marriages, And most marriages have one person that does a majority of the finances. I have many couples walk in and go, oh, if she is the first to go, I'm in trouble because I know nothing about our finances, or it could be vice versa. Mm. It's actually very rare that both the spouses know where all their finances are and equally manage it. So if someone is much older and they are uncomfortable in that position by themselves, a well-designed trust would even allow that person to bring on the next successor and partner up with them. So if one of my daughters was our successor trustee, I'm no longer able to manage the assets. And my wife goes, ooh, Paul did that. I want additional help because I'm not sure what to do now. And in somebody's 80s, that could be a difficult proposition to take over that, plus care for a disabled spouse who's having health issues. Maybe you're already compromised. And so a trust is supposed to be a flexible instrument to meet the different challenges and already be ready for those. Yes, having certain triggers in them so that when the original creators, the first trust makers, if they are unable to do it, or if you're single and you're unable to manage your finances moving forward, it must have successor trustees already named, already available. They have no power until the triggers are met, unless somebody wants to invite them on, which is always a possibility as well.
Being a trustee, the subject this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. People are intrigued by your approach to these subjects. How do they find out more about your services, Paul?
Yeah, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's a lot more information. Opportunities of education are coming up, past podcasts, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show, and I want to personally invite you to an upcoming educational workshop happening on Tuesday, May 6th, starting at 6 p.m. This will cover the basics of estate planning. What's the difference between a will and a trust? What do power of attorneys do? And much, much more. Would love to meet you. We're going to be doing this by Zoom, or you can come to the office and meet me in person. And it all happens on Tuesday, May 6th at 6 p.m. You can head to legacyandfaith.com, and there's sign-up instructions and opportunities found there. So head over to legacyandfaith.com and sign up for our Tuesday, May 6th, 6 p.m. educational workshop. See you there.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, looking at being a trustee. What does it mean? How are you a good trustee? How do you pick a trustee for your plan, your trust that you've developed? And Paul is walking us through some of these considerations.
Yeah, and you mentioned it right there, which is we talked before going into break that we need to have somebody named in our document as a successor. So who's going to take over? Oftentimes, clients look to their older adult children. And so that is a natural fit. Which child is, quote unquote, most responsible with money? Or if you have two kids, do we put them both in place? And so I want to cover just a little bit about what are some of the characteristics that you should be thinking about. And if you've already done estate planning, this could even carry over to, do you have the right person to be your executor?
And you can change
this.
If you're using a revocable trust and now you thought about it more, you say, man, I really don't think they're up for it.
Yeah, that's right. Or maybe they were the proper choice, but now life is getting in their way. What if they're going through a divorce right now? What if life is just really difficult? What if they just lost their job?
Moved across the country.
Yes, that's right. It took another job. That's right. And So life happens, mm-hmm. and in a revocable living trust, again, that word revocable, you have full power and control. So mm-hmm. we can come back and make these fine-tuned adjustments. If you use a will, then you can change your executor, or also again known as a personal representative. So as long as you are competent, you are able to make adjustments through these instruments. And the one exception would be if you create an irrevocable trust. We're not going to talk about that today. We'll get to it later in this series. But if that's irrevocable, then that's irrevocable. But with a revocable living trust, as life happens, we get the privilege of going back in and making fine-tuned adjustments. Mm. So who do we name then as an executor of a will or an individual who's going to manage our finances? And that's really what we're talking about. Who has the skill set to manage finances? Do they manage their own finances well? And sometimes I get clients who say, well, I really don't know how my kids manage their finances. It's nothing that we really talk about. Well, when you're making this decision, sometimes I have to encourage them to go back to their kids and talk about how they're managing their finances, because it's too critical of an appointment, whether it's through a will or through a successor trustee. Who are you going to implicitly trust to manage paying your bills? Who are you going to implicitly trust in canceling a credit card if we don't need it? Who are you going to trust to invest your money wisely? Are they going to be rogue investors? Are they going to take high-risk investments? Are they going to turn all your financial investments into cryptocurrency or trading on margin or go into the rental business when that was nothing of what you did and you like bonds because they're safe and predictable? That's not completely true. So maybe CDs. I don't know. Do they have the same investment boundaries and philosophy? Or if they don't, if they are more risky with their finances, are they going to honor and respect how you have managed your money? And they will then manage yours more conservatively. Because look, as we get older, then resources become more and more valuable. Most individuals in retirement begin to spend more money than what they are earning in a monthly capacity. That's not always true, but a high majority. So therefore, if resources are not as readily available, then we need to make sure that what you do have is going to be properly invested to ensure that they are there as long as possible. So we need to find somebody who is going to have similar or honor how you invest your money. Will they work with your financial advisor if you already have a financial advisor and that financial advisor is an important relationship with you? I can't tell you how many times I've seen a well-intended child, so that I'm not saying that they're doing it with ill intent, but out of convenience for themselves versus out of actually performing their duty of loyalty to their parent, they will take the funds away from the parent's financial advisor and use their own financial advisor. Mm-hmm. But that may not be what the parent wants.
Right.
And so have you had these discussions that if one of your kids or another person, a best friend, somebody that knows you well, if you don't have children and you need to do backups, then are they on the same page with how you want your money invested? Are they going to make the proper decisions? So it's not just about choosing the oldest child.
Okay.
I hear that. All right. They're the oldest, so I guess they get stuck with it. But are they the most responsible? Are they the most financially astute? Do they have education in finances? Do they manage their own money well? And let me address here, because today's show is going to be running out of time here pretty shortly. Let me address the idea of dual trustees. So I have two daughters, and oftentimes, specifically with two kids, I have some clients who walk in saying, I want both of them, because there's some notion of somehow that's an equal footing for them. But I'll do anything. It's their plan. I tend to talk about that if you want dual trustees or two people co-trusteeships, that there can be an administrative burden for that. Will financial institutions require two signatures on any transaction? That now, that's becoming easier and easier depending on the financial institution, but that can cause an administrative headache and hurdles that we may not want. What happens when they have a disagreement on how to invest or what to spend the money on? So now we've got two kids, and God did not create them the same way. They have they have different personalities, different skill sets. Even twins have different skill sets and personalities. And so, what happens when there is when they are not seeing eye to eye? Typically, the most dominant personality will overbear the first one, defeating the entire purpose. So I tend to not like co-trusteeships. I'll do whatever a client asks me to. That it's their decision. But if you're thinking about throwing both your kids in the mix, I would caution most individuals that that may not be the best choice.
Okay, looking at being a trustee this week on the show, we'll continue this discussion next time. People are intrigued by your approach to this and other subjects that they hear about on the show. Paul, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's upcoming educational opportunities. All of our past podcasts are there, and ways to communicate with us and connect with us are all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, good stuff. Legacy and Faith with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.